All right, Sean, what we got? Guess what? We're into double digits here. Episode number 10. Can you believe
it? Can you believe it?
This episode, we're going to talk about CrossFit gym gear and just like the gear that we're going to recommend that you wear or that you maybe need to go out and get right away. You know, what of the CrossFit gear do you need? What's kind of nice to have? What's totally not necessary? Let's get into the weeds about, you know, some of the common things that we see people, you know, maybe buying to bring with them to the gym and kind of do an assessment of what's actually necessary. And then maybe at the end, we'll even do like our kind of top five recommendations, like kind of order it. Anything you want to say to kind of segue us into the conversation here?
We put together a list of like 9 to 10 things, one of which is like a little group of things. So, it is funny, like, you know, you, me, everybody's always done it, especially the longer you've been in this, you start to procure, just stuff and everybody's got like a gym bag, and for mine, really only two things come out of it that I ever really truly use.
Yeah.
So the other stuff is just in there, just kind of making it look cool. So making it look official. Stuff. Yeah, right.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I only really use a couple things a lot. So we'll get dive into that. And I think, you know, we thought about this subject to do for this podcast because maybe you're new to CrossFit, new to the gym, give you an idea of what you actually need. And then maybe even if you've been doing CrossFit for a while, like kind of deciding if some of these fancy things that you see other people wearing or something is like totally necessary.
Yeah, yeah.
All right,
Mike, which one do you want to start with? How about we'll go athletic clothes.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. Yeah, that's one thing that I put early on my list here, you know, that I'm going to go ahead and say is one of the absolute necessary things. you know, you need to be wearing clothing that's breathable. If you are a heavy sweater, like I know you and I are in that category.
Yes.
Cotton is not your friend. You know, pure cotton gets real heavy and it, like, you know, it's sticky and not super, you know, breathable and able to work out in. And I'm just going to say in general, you should be able to like wear clothing to the gym that you can move in. It's not restrictive. Yeah. there's no chafage going on, because there's nothing worse than a little chafage on like a running workout or something.
Oh yeah. I got thick thighs, Mike, but I have to have like compression shorts underneath of my shorts for that exact reason. Or else I'd be starting forest fires here running out to the 400 meter mark.
Yeah, I always wear compression like underwear, or even sometimes it has like shorts with a liner. Hi, Katie. Katie wants me to say, for the ladies out there, a good supportive sports bra can be super important.
Yeah, I do not have the problem of or the gift of a well-endowed chest, but for those of you who do, investing in a very well-made sports bra is important.
Yeah, high quality, one for the ladies.
Shape and keeps them where they're supposed to be.
Katie's doing a celebrity pop in on just for that point. And now she's gone. All right. So anything else? So we talked
about, I would say and again, it's like, it's that that argument of like, you kind of get what you pay for. We were talking about it today at the gym. Now, this is not, and I mean, unless they want to sponsor us, and a thing for Lululemon, because like that's like the top of the top end of that. But like, I will say investing in well-made stuff is usually nice too, just because it's going to last longer. Like, especially if, like for me, example, like I know I pretty much live in athletic clothing, so it'll burn through pretty quick, and just how much we do and it gets dirty or whatever. And it is nice to have some things that last a little bit longer.
I agree. Yeah. This is one of those places where I would spend a little bit more money.
Yeah.
And, you know, invest a little bit more in some good workout clothes.
Although a good t-shirt is always nice, Mike, right? We've talked about it before, of collecting the t-shirts from other gyms, and you have this thing that you just have piles and piles of, that you're like, you never run out of a good t-shirt to work out in.
Oh yeah, I have plenty. I just donated some because I'm just like overflowing my drawers right now. All right. Yeah, that's a good place to start. I think the second place to go into is along the same lines, talking about shoe wear.
Yeah.
What should we put on our feet, do you think, Sean?
I mean, again, the space for CrossFit shoes has grown so much over the years. Like, it used to just be Reebok, and then Nike jumped into it. Now there's Noble and Innovate and like all these other companies that make these specific shoes. But I would say like a very good cross training shoe, like a running shoe is great for one thing, which is running.
Yeah.
But then it offers you everything else that we would do in the gym as far as lifting or any lateral movements or anything that is like a little bit more plyometric where you need some stability. There are the nice stiffer heel with not a lot of cushion, nice cross training shoe is fantastic for that. And then again, it's not great for running, it's not great for weightlifting, but it's the good all around shoe, I think, that kind of ticks up most of the boxes that you're looking for.
Yeah, I was going to go the same direction here. I see a lot of people sometimes wearing like running shoes into the gym on days where there's no running. And I'm like, ooh, it's kind of a mistake. I mean, yeah. You're especially if there's things like squats or deadlifts or anything where you should be feeling the ground more and having maybe more weight in your heel. A lot of the running shoes tend to have an elevated heel, which shifts you forward into your toes. So it's automatically kind of putting you in a compromised position from the start.
Well, not even that. It feels like you're just walking on pillows. Like we've always talked about that. A brand new pair of running shoes feels like you're like, oh my God, these are so nice. But it just offers so much instability when you need that stability that it's not, they're not worth it for the majority.
Yeah, I'm going to say that, you know, a good pair of CrossFit are like just essentially what we're saying is like a flatter shoe. So it doesn't really matter, I guess, what the brand is or anything like that. I'd say go out and invest in a flat pair of shoes to do most things in. I'm going to say that's one of the necessary things that we're going to talk about today.
Big question here. What's your favorite brand?
Yeah, again. I wish we were getting money to say this, but I tend to gravitate towards the Reebok Nanos, which are some of the original ones.
Me too.
I personally, this is another consideration with shoes. I have wider shoes. So a shoe with a wider toe box tends to be better for me. And I like kind of a stiffer heel and like a little bit more stability through the shoe. There's differences in that among the different brands that you mentioned. And for me, cost is a factor when it comes to shoes. So I don't know, not to throw shade here at any particular brands, but there's some brands that are really expensive and some like Reebok that are maybe not as expensive. They run deals all the time. So that's a consideration for me.
Yeah. I am a shoeaholic when it comes to CrossFit shoes. The collection of CrossFit shoes I have is immense because I like to tell myself I don't care how my feet look, but boy, sometimes it's nice to get a new pair of shoes. And I will agree with you. Some of the more expensive shoes that I bought, I actually like so much less than the ones I've gotten for like half off or whatever.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think for me too, personally, it's just the Reebok, you know, scratches the itch of what I'm looking for as far as like the quality.
Like wine, Sean. People
That's right.
buy expensive wine and they think it's going to taste so much better, but really... It doesn't. They've done studies and you don't know the difference. All you know is that it costs more.
Right. Your mind tricks you into thinking it's just better.
Yeah. So don't need to go super expensive on the shoes. Find ones that are flat and stable and fit your the form of your feet, depending on what the shape of your foot is. Anything else when you add to that?
I would say, all right, let's talk about the offshoots, like the extremes now, right? Mm-hmm. So we're living in the middle world here, like the extreme being a running shoe at the top end, right? It's going to give you the most cushion and support in different ways. And like for the specifics of running, on the other end is a weightlifting shoe.
Mm, yes.
Yeah. And what that does is the polar opposite of what a shoe does, or a running shoe does, right? Like a weightlifting shoe is going to be a little bit more snug. Well, and they just came out with one that has a wider toe box, this one company.
Yeah, I saw that.
Most of the time, they're a little bit more narrow. They have an extremely stiff heel. Sometimes they're even made of wood that you don't get any flex at all. And it comes with an elevated surface to allow, you know, to take off some of the requirements for like ankle mobility and things that kind of help with the squatting mechanics.
Yeah.
Again, both of those things, the high-end running shoe and the high-end weightlifting shoe, are very expensive.
Yes. Yeah, I think this is a good place to mention, individualized type advice here. So I do think largely, my opinion, Olympic weightlifting shoes, not totally necessary. But if you are someone who, again, like you mentioned, lacks the appropriate ankle mobility to get into a very deep squat position, Olympic mm-hmm. weightlifting shoes could be very valuable for you. Granted, this is a little asterisk there. You should be working towards the adequate ankle mobility. Don't just use that as a band-aid. You could use it to work on your squats and get into better positions for now. But I do definitely think you should be working on that ankle flexibility to one day go to those flat shoes and not need the heel lift of an Olympic weightlifting shoe.
Yeah. And I would say, on the conversation of a weightlifting shoe, I have a pair. I do love my pair, and I like to use them because they do offer a high, high, high level of support, but I only really break them out when it's a fully 100% weightlifting day or very close to it. Yeah, the Thursday when we did the snatches, and that was the only thing we were working on. Broke them out then, right? But most of the time, the cross-training shoe, like the Nanos and stuff, are good enough to kind of help with stuff, especially when it's sub-maximal lifts or where you're doing like a Metcon instead. Again, it's a very finite amount of times that I'm breaking out the weightlifting shoes. Half the time I joke that I bought them, I got to use them, you know?
Yeah, you and I were talking about this because we were lifting together during that snatch day, but I personally have hit all of my PRs on all of my Olympic lifts and my power lifts with Nanos on. So yeah. I'm not sure why, but it's true. I have hit all of my PR, like lifetime PRs in Nanos. So they can take you pretty far, I guess is my point.
Yeah. Now Mike, I think we're probably going to agree on this, but the versus the head to head of a weightlifting shoe versus a running shoe, which would you get first?
Probably a running shoe.
I agree.
Yeah, I think, in a workout where, like today, there was lots of running involved in the workout, usually a mile or more, I'll probably gravitate towards throwing the running shoes on, depending on what else is in the workout. If it's over a mile, mile and a half, 2 miles, I'll definitely throw them on.
Yeah.
What's your kind of threshold?
Agree. As soon as if it gets anywhere, I would say for me, again, being a bigger guy, anything over 400. So if we start doing 800s, breaking out the running shoes, just because it ends up just being a lot of pounding, especially if it's anything that's more than once. I've done it in my, cross training shoes. My hips don't love it, but again, for the longer distance runs, yeah, I'll absolutely go for my running shoes first.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to another one here. So right. I think I'm going to throw you another slow pitch here. I think I know what you're going to say about this. Let's talk about jump ropes. Do you need it? Is it necessary? What is your thoughts on a jump rope?
I will personally say a jump rope is probably going to be one of the more important things to get.
Agreed.
Just because it's, sometimes at the gym, it's like a mishmash of jump ropes. There's only certain numbers of certain jump ropes, right? Of different lengths. And when you're in the situation where you have to use a shorter jump rope or a longer jump rope, because it's just a little different. The necessity, I would almost put it as, to have a jump rope that is fitted to you specifically is extremely nice. And it also just allows you to get very used to one like form of jump rope, whether it's the weight or the length or anything like that. So yeah, I would say a jump rope is that is a piece of equipment that I always break out.
Yeah, I would recommend people who are just getting started, or even if you've been doing it for a little while and you don't have one, I recommend buying one. It's worth the investment. And again, there's varying levels of expense there. And same thing that we talked about with the shoes. I think some of the more expensive ones are maybe not worth the expense. Yeah. You don't need a super expensive one here. I do think there are some considerations to like which one you get. If you are newer to jump rope and learning some of the skills, it might behoove you to get a jump rope that's slightly thicker.
Mm-hmm. A little heavier.
Yeah, a little bit heavier, a little more weight to it. Some of them are really thin. The problem with that is you can't really feel the rope. They're super fast, but you can't really tell where the rope is at first until you get better at kind of learning where the rope is and getting more controlled with it. So the thicker rope can give you more of a feeling of where the rope is, can help you get things like double unders maybe in the early days before you need the speed of that thinner rope. And as you get more advanced, maybe the rope gets a little thinner.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And like you said too, just because it has a higher price tag doesn't mean it's a better rope.
I think the one that I use is in the $60 range, and it's my favorite. And it's like, I would say that's mid range in price wise.
I got your beat, Mike. My rope's $20. And I love it.
Nice.
It's just the Rogue, you know, completely, you just cut the length. But again, that's, I like that. Some of the more expensive ones to me are almost too heavy in the handle, but again, everybody's a little different.
Yeah, the weight of the handle is something to consider, the bearings, how quickly it's turning. And then what would you recommend in terms of sizing of a jump rope?
I mean, like the standard thing that we always tell everybody to do is if you stand on it with 2 feet, really, and if you stand on it with both feet and pull it up, essentially the end of the rope, beginning of the handle junction point should be essentially at like your armpits, right? And then that's also the thing, like you said, as you get better, the weight that you can go to a little bit of a lighter rope. It's usually as you get better, you want to actually make your rope just a tiny bit shorter.
Yeah.
Because again, then you're just in a better position and it should be good. But
yeah, I do think maybe in the beginning, so you can always make things shorter.
Right.
You know, you're never going to make your jump rope longer after you cut it. So in the beginning, I sometimes recommend that people cut it a little bit longer. And
yeah.
Generally, because in the beginning, people tend to have the fault of their hands drifting further apart from one another. So the further your hands go away from your body, the shorter that jump rope gets. So having that little bit of extra length can help you when you're learning. And then, like you said, I agree, cut it a little shorter as you get more efficient with keeping your elbows and hands closer to your body.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, a good rope, and especially one that's cut to you, is top tier.
Yeah. Where do you want to go to next here?
The big one that both of you and I are looking at, we'll wait, we'll save that one.
That's what I was asking, because I was looking at the same one.
Let's go to let's do a belt, like a weightlifting belt. Let's go to all the supportive pieces of equipment.
All right. What do you want to say about the Olympic lift, or just a weightlifting belt, powerlifting belt?
Let's talk about like what a belt does,
right?
A belt is adding support to your midsection in some of the bigger lifts. So, you know, the bigger heavy squatting, people wear them for cleans and deadlifts and all that stuff, overhead presses, but it's really just giving you the stability you need or looking for in your midsection, right? I think the big misconception that people have about belts is they want to just ratchet them as tight as they can and give this like blank slate of like, I don't need to engage in my core at all now. It actually is the opposite. Whenever you use a belt, you're trying to actually press into the belt as you use it to try and make your core even a little bit more rigid. And again, there's a million different brands of belts and, you know, price tags and all these things, that the shiny object syndrome of people wanting to buy the more expensive one because they need it. But
yeah.
Yeah. Well, what would you say, Mike?
Yeah, I would put a belt, like I wouldn't necessarily recommend people run out right now and buy one. Granted, we have a couple of dues at the gym and they're different sizes and that kind of thing. I do think, like you said, people don't know how to use the belt. Like yeah. I've seen people like you ratchet that thing on there and they're like, all right, belt, do your thing, protect me, you know, and that the belt is doing nothing. All right. The belt is doing nothing unless you know how to use it properly.
Right. Right. It shouldn't be like an 1800s corset that you're throwing on there.
Exactly. Yeah. You want to put it on there kind of not loose, but like be able to maybe stick some fingers in between you and the belt and
yeah.
breathe into that thing 360 degrees all the way around. Then suddenly your core becomes engaged. I always give the example of like a water bottle. You're filling that water bottle full of water. Now suddenly you can't break the water bottle like you could when there was no water in it.
Yeah. Now on a belt, Mike, I'm gonna get your opinion on this. When you use a belt, when you have a belt, what do you think are the most important things to use a belt on? Because I do think people that have a belt, use a belt, get a little belt happy.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm throwing it on for everything. Right. The moment it gets heavy, they're going to be like, put it on. So
that's a good question. Yeah. That's a great question.
Yeah. I have an opinion, but go ahead. I want to hear.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I like that. Let's give people some guidelines on when it's appropriate. I'm going to say I prefer people in the beginning to learn how to do that type of breathing and stabilization without the belt as they're doing their lifts. Granted, the belt could be a great way for you to get some feedback and learn what that breathing actually feels like. So yes. I can go either way a little bit. It depends on the person. I can maybe throw a belt on them to teach them the breathing mechanics, but I would prefer as they went a little heavier to be doing it without, at least in the beginning.
Yeah.
I think the more experienced you get when you're going to maximal loads with something like a deadlift or something, it could, you know, I say don't wear it for all your warm-up sets. Only start wearing it when you get into the maybe 85% and plus range for something like a deadlift. Back squat. I don't know if I would recommend it for anything other than that. What about you?
Yeah, and again, I'll use the example. It's like when people put it on for cleans or snatches and stuff like that. I think that's a very specific and like niche group and like of why you need it for those things. And I think that, and again, this is not like the high end weightlifters too. If you look at them, like in the Olympics,
they're going to wear a belt. Yeah.
Right. And you get, but again, that's like maximal loads where you're like, I can't even.
Technique is no longer an issue for them. You're probably missing that snatch because of your technique, not because you weren't braced.
Right. Now I will say this is where like I would advocate for a belt and like even working with people in the gym. It's like when we are going for maximal weight in a position where the bar is on your shoulders, meaning like a back squat, a front squat, jerk, things like that. And again, I agree with you where it's like when it gets above 85% or more, I think that is the time that you use a belt, right? I'm not so keen on belts for deadlifts.
Okay.
Because I think that's really one that I'll advocate for, that people really learn the bracing technique from when they're picking something up off the ground. Again, I think that's where people will divert to using, muscle recruitments to different things that you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good skill to learn. But the moment that it's on your shoulders and kind of the top of your rib cage, and it's compressing down, I think those are the times that I will tell people to wear a belt. But that's about it.
Yeah. Basically you're loading the spine.
Right. Right. Loading the spine in a, like going below parallel in your hips. Right.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's a big one that I'll kind of advocate for.
Here, what are your thoughts on this? Should people wear a belt during a Metcon or conditioning piece, and where is that recommended?
No.
I agree.
Again, it's a case by case basis, because like, if the point of wearing a belt is to say like your back is hurt and you're like, I just need support, right, to not hurt my back, is it probably smart to be doing a weight that you're like riding the line of where you're hoping this little piece of material is going to help you not hurt yourself? Probably not, right? If it's something that really constitutes, again, maybe it is that heavy squat clean or whatever, right? We've done those workouts before where it's like you do 30 calories on the rower and then you hop off and you do a squat clean, right? And you just do that for 30 minutes and try and build up those heavies again. Something like that, where you have like time.
Lifting with a high heart rate, but you have time.
Exactly. Not necessarily. It's still, I guess, more of a lifting workout, I would probably say then. But like if it's like today, we'll use today as an example, like 400 meter run, wall balls and box jumps, you probably shouldn't be throwing on the belt.
Yeah, if there's like a workout with like 50% of your one rep max deadlift on the bar, you don't need a belt if you are trying to move. And it makes it harder to breathe, essentially, because you're going to be very out of breath and you're probably not going to use the belt efficiently anyway because you're so out of breath.
Right.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Let's do another compression one, right?
Yeah.
We'll do the knee sleeves next.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I own a pair of knee sleeves. And this one, I didn't think about this one beforehand, but now that I were on it, I don't know. I think I'm going to put it in the not necessarily, but pretty nice category. Uh-huh. Like nice to have kind of one. I don't think everybody needs to run out and buy it, but I am guilty. I'm very guilty of putting these things on. Specifically for a few movements in particular. What are your first initial thoughts on the knee sleeves?
So as a knee sleeve user, I don't think they're 100% necessary. I do think they're very nice.
Yeah.
But like for me, you know, I played a sport that was pretty rough on the knees, and I've gone through like a knee surgery when I was younger and had a total reconstruction of my knee. It's almost more of a, and I spent a lot of time trying to get everything as strong as I can around the knee. But there's just some times where if it's like a very high, like volume of squatting, wall balls, whatever, I like to throw them on just for that added bit of like comfort for me mentally. That is, again, like I was just saying for the belt, you know, and not doing for that, like I'm guilty of it with the knee sleeves because of, again, past injuries that I'm like, just don't want to have happen again. And it's not all the time, but like, it's more of like that comfort thing for me at this point.
It's like a weighted blanket, Sean. You don't need one, but
that's right.
It'd be nice to sleep under that thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just that really, little bit of comfort.
Yeah. Really for me, it's like, I only wear them again for like really heavy squatting or high volume squatting.
I love knee sleeves for lunges personally.
Oh yeah. I do that more for not to bang my knee against the floor.
Yeah. It's just that little extra cushion that you can hit the ground and not like ram your knee bone into the kneecap into the ground. Love them for lunges. Love them for things like wall balls or fast kind of high repetition squats.
Yeah.
Help, it kind of gives you a little bit of a gauge of when you get depth, right? When you're getting below parallel, they get a little tighter and you kind of get that feedback of, all right, now I need to stand back up.
Yeah. 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 And then I do not like knee sleeves for running, for any of the cardios, this running, rowing, biking. I hate knee sleeves on any of those. So I have that conflicted moment of when they're in a high volume squat where I'm like, oh God. Got to make a decision here.
I am the same way. I will take those couple extra seconds to roll them down and roll them back up.
Well, I think like what you were talking about with the feedback of getting to the bottom of your squat. So we'll use the bike as an example. It's like just your constant flexion of your knee. And I hate the fold up in the back of the knee over and over and over and over again. and it just feels almost tight, like it's cutting off the circulation to my calf or something like that. That I don't like it for that.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Not necessary, but kind of nice knee sleeves.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You want to go to the next one here? You want to talk about another compressive one, different joint?
Yeah.
We'll go into wrist wraps. So the things that you see people wrapping around their wrists to give a little more support. Generally, you'll see this during, you know, wrist intensive exercises where like pressing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, again, this is kind of a very individualized thing. For some people, it might be pretty necessary, potentially. I would say kind of like the same thing that I mentioned on the lifting shoe thing. Is if you're wearing wrist straps or if you need them, you're probably neglecting something that you need to do. And I see you're nodding your head. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I would.
With some exceptions, but.
Yeah. And I think that's a good caveat is like, I would still almost put the wrist wraps with the belts as far as like necessity wise goes. And I would still put knee sleeves above wrist wraps, but I think with the wrist wraps, again, if you have say terrible wrists and you know that you have terrible wrists or you have carpal tunnel in your you know your hands or your in your wrist, that might be a good spot to where it's like you need that extra support, like you said. It's like that asterisk of this whole thing,
right?
But there are things that you can be doing in your off time to kind of help that and get some wrist mobility back to where you don't need it. But if you're just wearing them, just get an extra like 2 pounds on your overhead press or whatever. Yeah, not necessary.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. I think if, you know, and even maybe more important, if you're someone who has wrist pain on something like a clean in that front rack position, to me, that's showing either you're having a deficiency in your wrist strength. It could be a strength issue in the wrist. It could be a mobility issue in the wrist, or it even could be mobility in the lats or shoulder or tricep. It could be a couple of different things maybe going on at the same time there that's limiting your mobility and then making the barbell feel extra pressure on your wrist.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Like if you can't open your hand a little bit in that front rack position, it's, you know, and it hurts too much to be able to hold onto a bar. I think that's a good spot to look at of like, what can I be doing to help myself here?
Agreed. All right. You want to do the big one that we've been waiting for?
Well, should we? Hey, let's do a really kind of necessary one.
Okay.
Recovery tools.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So we see people, you know, purchasing all kinds of fancy things. Maybe even, you know, bringing them into the gym and like doing it. Like I'm thinking things like percussive, like, or what do you call them? Can't even think of the word of it.
Massage tools.
Massage tools. Yeah.
Air pros and stuff.
Yeah.
Air guns.
Air guns. That's the word I was looking for. Things like that. Things like compacts or electric stim machines. Things like there's all kinds of stuff. Scraping tools, all these things. Thoughts on that?
I think, again, having some of these things, if not all of them at one point, we were talking about it before. I think they're extremely nice to have, but not necessary at all. Right. Like, just making sure, like if you need a Theragun and a Sidekick, like Graston tool and all these things just to do your quads, and you could just do it with a foam roller or just stretching, I think that's just kind of not necessary at all.
Yeah. Right? I'm going to agree.
Again, that I think the recovery tool is the big flashy item. Look at this new shiny thing of like you need, and you're like, okay. And you try and justify it. But yep. Then it always just collects dust in a cabinet somewhere, as a la my compacts that I haven't used in probably a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I maybe have used it a couple of times around a couple of injuries that I've had. But yeah, I think nice, but not necessarily, not necessary. And I think some people maybe, you know, not even sure of when the right ways to use them or the right times to use them. And they end up just kind of collecting dust, like you said. Not super necessary. I think the best thing you can do is come go talk to someone, coach or someone who knows what they're doing. Come talk to us about like some individualized, you know, attention to certain areas. Like, you know, we can help you, point you in the right direction of what you need to work on in terms of some stretches or specific mobility things, even if it's a foam roller, something cheaper and easier to acquire. You know, we can point you in the right direction of what you actually need to work on. And you're probably going to move the needle way more working on those specific things that you need versus just like attacking the whole body with your Theragun.
Right. For 2 seconds, right?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I think anything else you want to say about recovery tools?
Not really. I mean, again, they're nice to have in some instances, but they're not necessary.
Yeah. Let's go one more maybe thing before. Let's talk about the Wayfest first.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we see, you know, people buying these at the gym. I own one personally.
Me too.
You know, weight vest. Is a weight vest necessary? You know, easy question here. I think, you know, not necessary. You know, where would somebody, I guess, benefit from a weight vest in your mind?
Man,
do you agree with the not necessary part?
Yeah, again, it's very nice to have in the instances of when we use it, but even when we use it, that there is so much time in between us using it that it just borders right into, or just falls right into not necessary. You know, if we're breaking the weight vest out like 3 to 4 times a year, is that truly a necessary thing?
Yeah, and it's quite an investment. Most of them are pretty expensive.
Yeah, I know. Again, I will say I have the, you know, the 5.11 vest and stuff like that, but I had a gift card. And then right before Murph, it was a couple of years ago, they just had a big sale that it was like half off. So then I think I ended up soup to nuts for all of it. I paid $40.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that's the only reason I bought it.
Nice.
Damn. Yeah.
Lucky. Yeah. Yeah. I also own one of those and yeah, you know, I'll use it for Murph for sure once a year. And then outside of that, for sure, once a year workout, couldn't tell you how often I actually wear it.
Yeah. But I will say we did that workout with the vest last week. And I think I did say to you, it was kind of nice to wear it.
Yeah.
For what we did that day, but yeah, not necessary.
Yeah. And I think for most people, you know, tune back into our first episode around intensity. Some people who own weight vests maybe like to wear them for workouts that maybe they shouldn't be. And I only say that in terms of intensity, right? We talked a lot about that in the first podcast, but you know, if you wear a weight vest, inherently your intensity is going to go down. You're going to be slower. You weigh more. You're not going to be able to move as fast. So it's a good way to lower the intensity of a workout, but it's not a great thing in terms of increasing the intensity. It might make the mental toughness side of the workout harder, but not necessarily the workout itself.
Now I will say, and this will be like playing devil's advocate here, if you are a person, right, who goes out and just destroys bodyweight workouts, right? We'll use Murph as an example, and you don't have a weight vest, but like that is something that you just like crush and get like 30 minutes on and just consistently are just unbroken on everything or whatever you're doing, right? A weight vest might not be a bad option for you for that specific person, right? Because then it does slow them down, like you were just saying, but it's also a necessary evil to slow them down because what they're doing isn't necessarily hard enough. And the intensity is lowering itself just because they're getting too good at it. So I think that there is a time and place for a weight vest, but again, that's a very rare example.
All you bodyweight ninjas out there, you should probably own one of these.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agreed. Yeah. If you're someone who's crushing those bodyweight exercises, certain workouts might make sense to wear one for sure.
Yeah. But again, you're going to wear it, what, a couple times a year?
Can borrow mine.
Yeah. It all is right. Cool to kind of dress them up with all of our patches and stuff that we have from.
Yeah. That's right. I just use it as a place to hold all my patches.
Yeah.
All right. I know you and I have been dancing around the bush a little bit about this one, because I think probably the most interesting one to talk about today is going to be the next one. Curious to see if you and I see eye to eye on this one in some ways.
I think this is the biggest one that we're going to talk about
easily. Yeah, I think, and it's probably the number one question that I get at the gym is, do I need to buy gymnastics grips? And I think people see other people wearing them and then they automatically assume like, oh, I need these. And then, and before long, I think everybody at the gym is wearing them every time that we do anything hanging on a bar. Let's talk about it. What are your thoughts on our gymnastics grips? Necessary, nice, or do you need them?
So for me personally, this is just me, they border on the nice and need them top end of the scale. Yeah, right. Yeah. Again, being a bigger guy, me swinging around there for too long, this is a recipe for disaster. So I do like having them and like the ability to grip a little bit more on something that is a gymnastics movement hang from the bar. But right there, I understand the other side of this, of like, you know, just like with anything, with the belt and all that, it's like you want to build the necessary prerequisite strength or endurance in your hands or whatever to not need them.
Yeah.
I'm just not there yet, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. You knew what I was thinking there. Yeah. I'll shout out to Bruce. He got me on the no grips club. Yeah. So I often will make jokes about this and when workouts come up, but and I try not to wear them as often as possible, but I think you're going to be surprised to hear that I will also say that they are in the borderline needing them category
for
most people, with the same caveats that you laid out. I think people shouldn't rely on them, particularly in the beginning.
This is a good, keep going with this.
Yeah. I like trying to build up some calluses and some, you know, I think is going to be good all around for people to not shy away from any kind of, abrasions to their hand skin, you know, like I think trying to build up that a tolerance to levels of hanging could be beneficial.
Right.
And then it's just a matter of taking care of your hands after that.
Yeah.
If you are adequately taking care of your hands, and we can get into that, you won't rip. Like, I think people are so scared of ripping that they automatically put on those grips no matter what, if they're hanging on something. And I think it's a matter of the only time that you really are going to rip are if you have built up calluses that have not been, whittled down, or the volume of like hanging is just too great, just too much movement.
Well, I think that's a good point here. And I think, this is also then, I agree with you, in the newer athlete does not need grips, right?
Yes.
I think there is a threshold that needs to be met, kind of almost like with the weight belt, right? It's like 85% above, but like if you can't do a pull up, you don't need grips, right? Or a toes to bar, like something. Once you get to being able to do like sets of 10, 12, 15, whatever it is, and you're hanging on the bar for a long time and you have that little bit of movement, that's where grips really become very nice to have. So it's like once your ability grows along with it, that maybe is when you talk, you have that conversation of like, okay, now this is necessary because I'm ripping every other day because I'm being able to do, sets of 25 toes to bar and no problem, but my hands just give out.
Yeah. Yeah. I found for myself, like I've built up you can kind of prolong the ripping and like build up a tolerance to volume in terms of the pulling movements, like pull-ups or toes to bar. And I kind of know my threshold now where I, if it's over a certain amount, I will put gymnastics grips on. And certain movements like muscle ups tend to be really hard on the hands. And then for me, kipping chest to bar pull-ups seem to be worse than pull-ups or toes to bar.
Really?
So, yeah, often I can get away with not wearing grips for toes to bar or pull-ups. But if it's a kipping chest to bar or a muscle up, I'll put them on because my volume and tolerance is much lower.
Right. Well, it's weird. Like even with a muscle up, having grips is nice for me, but I tear outside of the grip, like on the inside, or I guess the kind of in the meaty part of my thumb. That's where I'll kind of lose it.
I think it's important to note too, I have ripped straight in the middle of my gymnastics grip before. They are not by any means like totally preventative.
So no,
even if you have them, I still think you should be aware of, you know, your amount of volume that you're doing as you progress and get better, and figure out where kind of your threshold is.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, like talking about the hand care, again, whether you have grips or not, like a callus in your palm is essentially having this little fleshy stone in your hand that it's kind of rubbing around and catching on. Right. So that's why it's like taking those out, removing the stone from your shoe, right? The pebble like out of your shoe to kind of that annoyance part of it will help not rip as much. But it is funny because I asked Crystal, I was like, is there anything that you would like use, not use? And the only thing that she said was grips, right? And she said, again, she was a high level gymnast when she was younger. But she said, I'm probably a wild card on this one. She's like, I like the feeling of my hands on the rig and I don't like having soft hands. So she's like on your side, Mike.
Yeah.
Of like, she wants to go barehanded.
Part of the reason why I advocate for no grips is not just to be like stubborn.
Tough guy.
Yeah. And just to be like a tough guy. Like, I don't use them. But I do like the grip of my skin on the bare steel, you know. I feel like I get better grip with just my hands than I do with the gymnastics grips. The gymnastics grips add, you know, whatever it is, a couple centimeters of that actually, in my opinion, taxes your grip and your forearms a little bit more, just because of that little bit of separation away from the barbell. Where I feel like I get a better grip, which is chalk and the pull-up bar.
Yeah, I can understand that. That would be a nice thing to have.
grips. Yeah, I think I'm gonna say like I said, might be surprising, but it borderlines on the necessity for gymnastics grip for me. I think maybe you should, you know, purchase some as you start getting things like pull-ups and toes to bar. You might want to have them in the gym bag to throw on if you see a workout with a higher volume of some of those movements as you're building up the strength in your skin and building up a tolerance to ripping.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, I think we do agree on that in some weird roundabout kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not to your level now yet, Mike. So.
Yeah, this took a long time to develop, Sean. You know, it's years of effort to get to the point that I'm at now, where I don't need them for, you know, my tolerance is somewhere in the ballpark of like past 60 toes to bar. I might start needing them past 20 muscle ups. So kind of like that kind of ranges is where I'll throw them.
Yeah.
On. Yeah. All right.
All right, Mike, do you want to rank our top five most necessary or needed things?
Yeah. One of them is we didn't talk about yet is the wearable devices. Do you want to talk
about that?
We'll keep this one kind of brief because we could probably go down a huge rabbit hole here, but one more and then we'll kind of rank them. So wearable devices, you see everybody nowadays wearing some kind of watch that tracks something. You know, whether it's, you know, again, there's huge range of prices here and different versions of this, but essentially all of them keep track of activity levels in some way. They'll keep track of maybe your heart rate. They'll track things like maybe it tracks sleep, maybe it tracks you know, some other kind of recovery type things. And there's all different kinds of versions of those. What are your initial thoughts on wearable devices?
Again, I would classify this as the nice to have, but nowhere near necessary. Like, having had a Whoop, you know, I've had a Fitbit, a Polar heart rate monitor. I've had like all, I've kind of run the gamut, never had an Apple Watch, but they're nice to have. And it's cool to kind of see, you know, what my workout looks like or what my recovery looks like or sleep and things like that. But, you know, having just canceled my Whoop subscription, it's kind of in that same thing of like, you don't want to be a quote unquote slave to this thing on your wrist of being like, you know, the people that are like, wait, I didn't start my activity thing. We started the workout, right?
I see everybody now like go down and hit something on their watch before. Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, or it's that and like, what are you doing with that data that you're trying to log? I think that's where the importance of it kind of comes into it. If like, well, I'll use my Whoop as an example. Like I use that to really look at, you know, how I felt on certain days, if I slept bad, what I should be doing, how to pull myself back or push myself a little bit more based on like my recovery. Obviously the wrench in the system of like Charlie and throwing sleep way off, right, is a little different. And I started to just develop my habits based off of that in a good way. But then once I found that I got into those comfortable habits and realizing like what was bad, what was good, right? What is the need of it there as much? If I'm not going to continuously try and improve other habits or different things, like if I get to my baseline, has it met the need of that thing, right?
Yeah, I think I'm going to take a slightly different starting point to my point of view, and I'm going to finish in a very similar place that you did. I'm going to go ahead and say, I think that it would be really nice, maybe even necessary for someone new to exercise. And yeah, the reason that I'm going to say that is I think any of these ones, it doesn't really matter which one you choose, you know, they all do different things, but pick one, going to go with it. It could help illuminate some things for you, especially if you are someone who hasn't been like very aware of their bodies or for a long time, you maybe, you know, haven't exercised a lot or ever tracked anything before. And yeah, it's kind of in the same ballpark. I know Katie will often have people who are concerned about nutrition, track a couple of days of their nutrition. It always starts with awareness. So you kind of have to bring some awareness and be like, oh, I didn't know I wasn't sleeping 8 hours. I'm only sleeping 6 or 7 or whatever. I didn't know that I was only walking 4,000 steps a day. Some people are just really unaware of those things. And something like a wearable device can help bring that to your attention. So first thing is awareness, right? So once you're aware of something, then you can, make some intention around it and then, you know, do the action. Like, and this is where I'm going to come back around to like what you were saying, like you need to be aware of the thing first, right? The change that maybe you want just be aware of like, okay, I'm not getting enough steps. And then you could be like, I want to move more. That's your intention, right? And then you make action. This is what you were saying around that. You're like, I'm going to get up and walk my dog every morning. And that's different, right? You're changing your habits from what they were to something new. And, through that action, you're going to see some positive changes. And I think these wearable devices, you know, you and I talked about this, you and I both canceled our Whoop, not because I don't think Whoop is valuable. I think it's extremely valuable.
Yeah.
But I think that if you're not going to use that wearable device to change your behaviors, then you might as well not wear it.
Right.
Because really the value is in the behavior change that comes from the awareness that it gives you.
Yeah. I agree with that. Kind of what you were saying too, is like for the newer people, I think it could be super important. Right.
Yeah.
Because I think awareness, like you were saying, is key, right, to making any behavioral change things. If you think you're at this place of like, I move all the time, and then it's not, I think that's a pretty It's a pretty big slap in the face to be like, what do you mean?
You get like 20,000 steps a day, but then on Saturday and Sunday, you get like 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I agree. Like, again, I love my Whoop and like everything it did, but it was, you know, I had understood what I needed to at that point. And then I know you've said this to me too before. It's like, maybe one day you go back to it when you want to change other behaviors and you know, after you get to where you're good there, then great, you go back to it.
Exactly. Yeah. I often say like, if something like major life change happens, I'll probably go back to it and try and, you know, see what it does to all those things that I was tracking and, you know, try and make it as good as possible. And I think, again, it comes to like a decision. Like if you know that you're sleeping like shit, like, and you're aware of it, but you're like, you know, this is just where I'm at. And like, you don't want to make any habit changes. That's fine. Just as long as you're aware of it. And then you can decide on whether or not you want to make some changes and, you know, make some positive differences in your behaviors.
Yeah.
And Katie's pointing out another thing that you could use a wearable device for. She uses it to track her menstrual cycle, which I think is, could be really valuable for, you know, people who menstruate. And
it's, not you and me.
Could be super valuable for somebody because, if, you know, through different stages of your menstrual cycle, your hormones are doing all different kinds of things. Basically, the closer to your menstrual cycle that you are, the more able to like right after you have your period is when you're most capable to handle volume, which I think is opposite of what most, you know, females kind of believe. They're not feeling so great. It's actually the days and maybe the week leading up to your period where you need to moderate your volume and your intensity the most. So something to be aware of. This could help you track that cycle if you're regular and kind of get a better idea of when you can really push it and when you can't. So that's another valuable thing for a tracker that's out there. Again, changing your behavior, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say one more thing, but now I can't remember. yeah, I think, you know, depending on the stage of life that you're in, it could be a valuable thing to use. But again, if you don't change your behaviors based on it, then you're kind of just wasting your money. And you're, again, being fixated on something, like you said, that maybe isn't going to move the needle in the right direction.
Right.
All right. You want to rank the things that we talked about today?
Order? We'll go like from 5 to 1.
Yeah. So these are the things that we deem kind of necessary or things that we talked about that could be necessary in the order of importance. Right.
Yeah.
What's your number 5?
This is going to be a little bit of a shock, Mike, but again, I am going to go with a weight vest.
Ah, that is a lot of shock. Yeah.
As a, I excluded, I'll be, you know, forthright on this. I excluded athletic clothing out of this. So okay. Where we start first. So I did take that out and just went straight up things that we would use for CrossFit as a whole. So I went at number 5.
Yeah, nice. My number 5 is what we just talked about. I put wearable device.
Ooh.
So again, for the same reasons that I said that it could be necessary if you're newer, if you have life changes going on, I think it could help you get back on the right track. And I forgot to mention last time, anything that you're tracking, you're going to inherently do better at.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like gamifying stuff, right? If you're tracking your steps, you're probably going to get more steps. So it could be a good thing just to initially like get you going in the right direction.
Yeah.
All right. Number 4.
All right. What do you got for number 4, Mike?
I got gymnastics grips, which might be surprising to you. I don't know.
Yeah. I went number 4, knee sleeves.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We have different lists.
Yeah, there's going to be biases coming from my end on this, but
yeah.
Yeah, I put that at number 4. Just again, I think they're necessary for certain things, but again, nice overall.
Yeah. Gymnastics grips, same kind of thing. I think it's necessary as you develop the strength and stamina for some of these gymnastics movements. You're going to need them at some point, so you should probably buy some. Number 3, you go first.
Ready? Grips.
Oh, nice.
Grips are number 3 for me.
Yeah, I went jump rope, and you'll see why. I think yours is probably going to show up a little higher, but we talked about that early on. I think everybody should buy their own jump rope. You have the right size, you have the right, size one for you, the right speed, and, you know, appropriately, and then you get used to the same one over and over, like you mentioned.
Yeah. All right. What do you got number two?
So I went athletic clothing, where you excluded that one. Yeah, I think, I see where you're going with that. I don't know. I think it's just too important not to put on the list. Like, if you're wearing clothes that are not good to work out in, it's going to be a big deterrent. So just make sure you're wearing things that are breathable, you can sweat in, and you can move in.
Yeah. My number two is your number three, which is a jump rope.
All right. We're in agreement there.
Same thing. I think that is probably, outside of my number one, the most important thing to get for people right off the bat.
Boom. I think we have the same number one.
I think we do too.
Number one is shoes for me.
Yep.
Yeah. So why do you think shoes are the most important thing that you
should own? It is because it's the one thing that you're going to use in every workout. And again, I can't understate the importance of, like, a nice, good pair of cross training shoes for everything, right? For weightlifting stuff, for plyometric stuff, for running stuff, for whatever. It's just going to be a good thing for it all, right? Yep. Not necessarily the best for everything, but it is the most important thing to kind of, you know, tick the most boxes, like I said.
Yeah, go get yourself a pair of shoes that is relatively flat, stable, and versatile, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Anything you want to say in closing here on a CrossFit gear or gym gear?
I would just say, don't put too much importance on the things that aren't necessary to you in particular, right? Don't do it just because it looks cool and you see other people using it. If it is truly necessary for you, then by all means, go nuts. But, you know, if you're not there, say, gymnastics, as far as your capacity goes for that, or weightlifting, right? You don't need grips or shoes just yet. Maybe one day, but not right off the bat.
Yeah, agreed. Hopefully this helps people decide on, you know, what they should buy and have in their gym bag. Maybe even get rid of a few things. Charlie,
say hi to everybody.
Hi. Charlie's waving. To finish out the 10th episode here. All right, guys, let us know if you have any of the good episodes that you want to hear from us, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Sean.
See you guys.